Was this your decision, or was this the team's decision that you're no longer the GM?
No, it was the team's decision. I got a call in my office at 6:21 this morning, and Mr. Gowdy came over at 6:30 and told me that I'm making a change. And I said, well, I think you guys are making a mistake, but that's up to you guys, and thanks very much. And packed my bag and came back home.
TSN 1200.
Welcome back, everybody. 9:14 on this Sens game day, Monday. Sens and Capitals tonight at 7 from Canadian Tire Centre. Pre-game show begins at 5, but the big story right now here in Ottawa, as you heard, Marcel Desjardins, use the phrase the team used, relieved of his duties, fired, gone, whatever you want to describe
sacked.
It. Yeah, sacked, to use a premiership term. No longer the general manager of the Ottawa Redblacks toward the end of a seventh season. Of course, he's the only GM the team has known. The regular season record is overall not stellar at 46-71-2. That's about a 39% winning percentage. But there are four playoff campaigns out of six seasons. And, of course, a Grey Cup championship in 2016, the first this city has celebrated in 40 years. It has been an interesting last couple of years, though, with the Redblacks. Five wins in their last 29 games, and a lot of people, a lot of fans, especially on our post-game show, have been calling for the head of the general manager, even more so than the coach this year. The man who has talked to a lot of fans on our post-game show joined us right now. Normally, we talk with Duke Ellingson on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline about NFL on a Monday morning, but to Duke, as you can imagine, this is the number one story of the day. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, guys. How about you?
Good. We'll begin by asking, are you, with three games to go in the regular season, officially eliminated from the playoffs on Saturday, but we all knew that was a fait accompli before that. Are you surprised at the timing of this or not?
You know what? Not really. In fact, there was one of the main focuses of our post-game show, as you guys were talking about, a lot of the fans calling in. And my thought was this, that, you know, there was going to be a change. It was pretty clear that he wasn't coming back. And one of the things that the fans have been asking for is some sort of sense that there's a plan and there's going to be change and it needs to be made. And there's been a lot of silence from Ossig. And so I had made the comment on Saturday after the game that if it's going to be done, maybe do it now. It's not going to change anything in terms of roster personnel moves the rest of the way. But send a message to the fans that, you know, change is coming and it's going to be happening. I mean, I would have thought it would have been handled a little bit differently. Maybe that they would have had a press conference of some kind to give Marcel his due for what he has done for the organization. But no, I think at the end of the day, they probably had to do something to send a message to the public that you know, they weren't going to sort of stand for the way things were and changes were coming. So I'm not all that surprised at the timing.
Is much about the business side, Duke, at this point, and the timing of the firing?
Well, yeah, I mean, don't know. I think that the reality is, like I said, that, you know, the last three games of the season, the roster, the players that are here are going to finish out the year. It's not like you need a general manager in place to bring a bunch of guys in or make a bunch of changes. So I think, his contract was expiring anyway, so I think it just accelerated after the sense of hopelessness over the last few weeks and that fans have said that we're just really looking for something to be said or done.
With our Red Blacks analyst, Duke Ellingson. So we had Marcel on the station earlier this morning, Duke, and I mean, he was fairly candid, as he always has been when he's been on with us. He said when he was informed by Mark Gowdy, the team president, that he's being let go, he said he told him that he thought they were making a mistake. And he told us he believes the team, despite the record, is on the right track with a lot of good young players. Do you believe that's the case?
No, I don't. I mean, I think they've missed on too many players in the key positions of those players. And I'll say this, and I've said it, I think, for the last number of weeks, and maybe going back early in the season. I mean, I think when he hired Paul LaPolice, I believe that Paul said, I'm coming, but if I'm coming, I want Matt Nichols coming too. And I think that was the first mistake that they made as an organization, and I think that's just a huge miss that could set the franchise back a number of years. And I think they've had too many misses on some of the personnel on both sides of the ball. The defense has been pretty solid, but in this league, you need playmakers on offense, and I think they've really struggled to find the kind of American receivers that the other teams in the league have and the kinds of receivers that they had in here through the years where they went to the Grey Cup. So, no, I don't necessarily think the team is in very good shape, especially when you think about skill position and the offensive line, which is right now a complete train wreck.
Is the great part of the CFL, Duke, that you're not locked in and that you can turn this over pretty quickly?
Oh, 100%, and that's what you've seen year over year in this league. And I think, you know, it's interesting, LaPolice coming from Winnipeg, and I get that it's not always easy just to find the right guys. But if you look at the blueprint that Winnipeg has, especially on the offensive line, they've really fixated on having two real, you know, stud American tackles, and then having the three kind of hard-working, you know, blue-collar interior linemen, and that has worked so well. They brought in, they've had Andrew Harris as well, obviously, which helps them from the ratio standpoint, but they've kind of built that offensive line with that mentality, and I'm just surprised. I know they've been looking for those tackles. They're harder to find maybe than we think, but at the end of the day, I just think they've got a lot of work to do in those fronts, in those areas.
With Duke Ellingson, do you think, we're biased here in Ottawa, do you think that when you think about the 9-team Canadian Football League, is the general manager position of the Ottawa Redblacks as good as we think it is here in Ottawa, or are we maybe overrating it a little bit?
Do you mean in terms of the importance of it, or the ability of Marcel?
In terms of how desirable it is out there.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, there's only 9 of these jobs available, and in some cases you may even have a situation where the head coach doubles in that role. But, no, I mean, I think anybody that fancies themselves a builder of an organization, a builder of a football team, and there's lots of those guys out there, I'd like to see them, you know, be a bit creative in the job search. But I think Ottawa is a pretty good destination. It's got the, you know, the great fan base. We know it's got the new stadium. The questions about Oseg, I think, are legit, and that's why I'm curious to see when and if they come forward with some public statements on all of the questions that the fans are asking. And I think GMs would be asking the same things about the long-term commitment of the ownership group, and are they going to continue to be willing to do what it takes in terms of spending and in terms of going after marquee players to make this franchise viable again.
I asked directly to Marcel, are you spending the cap? He said, yes, Duke. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that? And if that's the case, then does that even say that they've missed even more on what should be a fairly level playing field here in the CFL?
Well, it's funny you say that, because that's kind of my argument. You can't really have it both ways, because I think a lot of us have felt that maybe Marcel has been hamstrung by the ownership group not spending, which means that he couldn't bring in the players that he would have liked to, or they couldn't make offers in free agency to the guys that they would have liked to make. But if they are spending to the cap, then to your point, now they're misspending the capital, right? And they're bringing in the wrong guys, making the wrong decisions, and maybe sending the wrong messages to certain players as well. I mean, if you go back, I understand there's a finite amount of money to be spread around, but you know, when you make a decision that somebody like a Greg Ellingson a couple of years ago, you know, we just can't pay you X because we can't then pay everybody else. Maybe you let go a guy that really, you know, was a difference maker for you. So it's, again, the decisions on where you spend that money. And if you have enough to spend, then, it is incumbent on the GM to make those decisions and make them well.
Although in the breadth of his answer to Simmer's question, he did say that he talked about the late retirement of Alex Mateus, mm-hmm. just before the season started, who was, you know, very well compensated in Canadian Football League standards. Brad Sinopoli, same thing,
yep.
Retired late. And he mentioned Corey Tindall as well, who's an American defensive back, who's a key member. He decided to retire. I don't think the money part was as big with him. But he said, in these COVID times, it's hard, you know, that late in the game, it's hard, you know, he almost intimated it's hard to find to spend the money on. He said, in retrospect, we had to bring in a bunch of players, so we eventually spent the money. But I guess mm-hmm. the point was, if they hadn't known these guys were going to retire or not be back, that whatever that amount of money is, and I'll just use the ballpark figure of, let's say, 400 grand or more, yep. which is a significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't known that previous to that, they could have signed better players instead of just kind of covering their costs of just doing the American airlift that they do every year.
Yeah, and that's a very valid point, and it's one of the components of this whole discussion that is unique to the, you know, to the COVID era, things that never would have been contemplated before. We'll never really know how much that all played into the decisions that Alex Mateus and Brad Sinopoli specifically made, but it's fair. I mean, if you had had that money in your pocket and you during free agency and you knew that you were going to have it to spend, maybe you pick different guys, maybe you make better decisions, or you can throw higher dollar amounts at the marquee guys that you'd like to try to lure. So, you know, that's fair, and I would probably say that I don't think any other CFL team had retirements late in the game like Ottawa did, with two key players on the offensive side of the ball, both Canadians.
Do you, is that, I mean, given the fact, Duke, that they obviously didn't play any football at all last year, in any way, should Marcel Desjardins have known that that was a possibility? I'm talking about those two players in particular. Known that's a possibility. And if so, either demanded an answer or said, you know, we're going to have to move on because I can't, you know, we can't take the chance that you're not going to come back given how important players you are and how much money that you're worth that I could spend. Did he maybe drop the ball there? Is that a fair criticism?
It could be, and we don't know all of the dynamics of those relationships. And, you know, is it really reasonable for a general manager or an organization to have that kind of relationship with all of its players? Now, I would maybe make a case that when you've got a real linchpin guy like Sinopoli, who, you know, so well-known in the community, so well-respected, the Ottawa connection, all of that, maybe you should be have been a lot closer to him and a lot closer to those situations so that you had a sense of really what he was thinking and or maybe made it more. I mean, we've all heard that, well, we know that the players took a prorated salary cut going into the season because of the 14 games versus 18, but maybe, you know, maybe Brad never felt like they came to him and said, you know what, we're trying to find a way to make this a little bit more palatable for you specifically because of what you mean to the organization, and maybe they missed the boat there. So I don't know how close they are to the players, how close Marcel is to the players to be able to know all of that. But the timing was, you know, it couldn't have been more unfortunate for any team to have to replace guys like that so late in the game.
What's the Red Blacks' reputation around the league with players and other management?
Well, you know what, I've heard multiple things, and I mean, we all know that Marcel, I mean, one of the things we all have liked about him is he's very direct. You know, when he comes on with you guys, I've heard, you know, many interviews, and I've spoken with him, he's really quite direct, and at the same time, that can play the other way, because I think he's probably some people off over the years because he is so direct, and we know he's lost some players maybe as a result of those relationships, so I'm not sure. I mean, I think what will help players, if they have that sense, if that's a bit of a sense around the league, that maybe that with him gone now, there'll be a bit of a fresh start, and hopefully some players will say this is a kind of a landing place that I'd like to think about going into 2022.
Our friend Simmer Duke has forwarded Henry Burris's name as a guy who should be considered for that. Hank's got a pretty good job right now in Chicago, but who knows? But I guess sort of a broader question. Do you think the next general manager of the Ottawa Red Blacks necessarily has to be a CFL lifer, or is part of the equation someone who has the ability to kind of be a salesman in a, you know, let's bring in as many good guys as we can to Ottawa because I want you to come and play for me? And Henry Burris is a very popular player. There's no doubt about that. And you know that. So maybe Burris, maybe someone like Burris. Like, do you think they should consider that, or should they go with someone who has a lot of experience within the game?
Well, you know, sort of a truism in the business world that people don't leave companies, they leave leaders. And I think maybe you could make the same case for people coming to organizations, including sports organizations, that may not come for the team or the business, but they come for the person. In other words, if a general manager is there that can sell and can provide a sense that it's going to be a great place to be and a great place to play, maybe you get somebody with that kind of reputation. I think the unique thing about trying to find general managers in the CFL, and Marcel said this to me early in the season, he said, you know, people don't really realize how hard it is to build a team when you've got all these parameters. You've got the Canadian versus the American. You've got the global piece. Now you've got the issues around the import players that are deemed to be Canadians or non-imports, depending how long they played in the league, that you can replace during the game. He said there's all these parameters that you're trying to figure out. It's not just assessing talent. But at the end of the day, I would say that the guy that they need to bring in here has to have a real good network of scouts and people that he knows within the U.S. college system, because that's where you're, you know, kind of bread and butter. We're all going to be able to identify who the good Canadian kids are coming up. It's really finding those key American players that can come and make a difference, and I think that's what they need to find, is somebody that can really evaluate talent.
Yeah, I wish people, Duke, behind the scenes could see the manager of people, and also in trying to build a culture. I put a lot into Hank and Nicole, so that's part of the factor. Mm-hmm. Also, just kind of Red Blacks thing, already putting out a statement, now just via Dave Naylor. But when I hear somebody say, well, they want to find a general manager that'll keep the coach, that only tells me they don't want to pay the coach to stay home, and so they're going to find somebody that's going to come in and basically say, hey, the coach is great, and you're just going to move ahead.
Anyway, and that's a real dangerous game to play, and I agree 100%. If JR was asking about it being a great place to come, I think if you're a general manager and you're going to, you know, risk your reputation and you're going to risk your livelihood to come here, you do not want to be put in a box where you're going to say, you know, you're not going to have a say. Because it never works when the general manager is forced to keep the head coach, and then You know, he's got a better idea of who he would like coming in, just like head coaches don't want to be told who their assistants are. And so I think that's a real dangerous approach, and it'll be interesting to see, with all of that in mind, who ends up stepping forward or who they can bring in. You'd hate to feel at the end of the day as a fan that they ended up having to settle for something other than their first choice, because their first choice wouldn't agree to those terms.
Do you think LaPolice is a good head coach?
I think the jury is still out. I mean, he hasn't had a great record as a head coach in this league. He's maybe been, and there are lots of coaches we know that are better as coordinators. So far, I mean, there's a lot of in-game decisions that I've really struggled with, his decision-making, especially on things like third-down gambles. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's a great head coach. I think he's a pretty good coordinator, and I think he's a pretty good quarterback coach, but I'm not quite sure yet. He's, I would say, with great certainty, they've got the right head coach.
Last one for you on Paul LaPolice. Are you a believer? We've seen it in other markets in the Canadian Football League where the coach is the coach and the GM. And maybe he's got an assistant who does a lot of the legwork with the GM, but it's obviously a common vision because there's only one guy. He's the guy getting the players, and he's the guy that that coaches the players as well. Are you a fan of that, or do you like the job as two separate jobs?
I like it separate. I mean, I think there are some success stories in both the NFL and the CFL where it's worked in some cases, but you have to have a pretty strong personality. And you're right. I mean, splitting the duties between trying to figure out all of the nuances of a salary cap, and as Simon was talking about, you know, building their culture, all the things that GMs have to do while you're still trying to run the team on the field, I think it's too big of a job for one guy, and it takes a pretty special person to make it work.
All right. Good stuff, man. It's been a crazy couple hours here.
Yeah. I feel bad for Marcel, and I have said for almost every post-game show to the fans, you know, let's not forget what this guy did to build this organization and to take them to 3 Grey Cups in 4 seasons, including a championship. So he deserves an awful lot of credit and thanks for what he's done here.
Appreciate the time and the insight, as always, Duke.
Have a great day, guys.
There's Duke Ellingson, our Red Blacks analyst, joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. By the way, assistant general manager Jeremy Snyder, as per the news release from the Red Blacks, will assume interim general manager duties for the final 3 games of the season while the Red Blacks coordinate a search for a new general manager, which I'm guessing is going to stretch into the offseason. We'll see what happens with that. But again, the news of the day, Marcel Desjardins has been let go as the general manager of the Red Blacks. He joined us earlier this morning. If you missed the interview, you can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. We'll take a break, come back. We'll set up Sens and Caps for you. It's a game night here on TSN 1200. That is next here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
See, a few of you have a very unique way of spelling veteran. If you don't spell it right, it goes into my little basket of texts. Well, not so little. It's a large basket of texts. And somebody tried to pass off C-E-T-Y. Okay?
Oh, that's got to go in there. I don't care if they misspelled veteran. SETI has got to go in there.
You guys. It's like you can't make a mistake around here. Like, I've got to be perfect. Like, 99.9% of the time being right is not good enough?
Because whenever Sim or I make a mistake, you never, ever bring it up or ever correct us. Absolutely correct.
Water off the duck's back. That's the way it works. Okay, let's get some texts at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Marcel Desjardins is delusional if he thinks this team is on the right track. WTF. I've been watching football. It's another one. I've been watching football in Ottawa since 1976, and I've seen a lot of bad teams. Super season 88 being one of the worst. I have zero doubt the 88 team would absolutely destroy this Red Blacks team. The 2021 club is by far the worst team I've ever seen take to the field at Lansdowne. Yeah. That's from the Robber Baron.
I thought they were actually off to a pretty good start, Hammer. And then JR brought up with the coach a 3-15 year, and suddenly it just feels like they've been cursed. I think they've lost 7 in a row since.
Was I wrong?
Not at all. But
no, sir.
The tone in his voice of denial, which is fine, JR, I appreciate it. But that's where everybody else saw this was going. Like, it wasn't their first win of the season the lowest offense in the history of the CFL that won a football game?
That was the opening game of the year.
Like 70 yards?
Yes, it was less than 100, I think.
And all these seasons run together. together. But I remember the same thing happened in Calgary a few years ago where they won the first game and everyone was, oh, yeah, everybody said we're going to be the worst team in the league. Ah, we'll show them. And, yeah, everybody was right. This is the worst team in the CFL. Well, there's a lot of bad teams, but they're right there.
The BS that goes on behind the scenes to me is also an indication of trouble with ownership. It comes from Unsigned, and that was Marcel Desjardins paraphrasing his words here. I don't have to talk about all the BS that people don't know about. Yeah. That was part of what he told us. Yeah. Didn't allude any more to that, but you can read into that what you will. Dave writes, Simmer, I think you underestimate the passion of Red Blacks fans despite the record. In the pouring rain with a poor team, there were still over 16,000 diehards out. They care. I'd keep a closer eye on the 8,000 currently going to Sens games. That comes from Dave.
Yeah, Dave, I don't work for the Sens. I know people in other markets like to say stuff. Hey, the Sens have a long ways to go. Hey, if their business is in great shape, JR, that's awesome. I'll say for my peer group, I'm 53 years old, and I'll say anybody between 45 and, I don't run into many people where they're passionate about talking about the Red Blacks. I run into a lot of people that love going to the games and supporting the team, but the passion does not run nearly as deep as the Ottawa Senators in a sense of, when people get mad at the Sens, they want to be heard. And for a lot of people I know about the Red Blacks, just speaking from my own background, they just go quiet. I don't hear it as a lot of conversation, but I'm also not a football guy.
Pete from Barrhaven writes, read the firing of Marcel Desjardins. Good morning, fellas. I was really impressed with Marcel's take on his release from the team. What really piqued my attention was his comment about the, quote, BS behind the scenes. We, as the public, know very little of what actually goes on behind the scenes, so I trust that his hands were tied, regardless of his record as the GM of the team. I'm proud of what he accomplished for the city. That comes from Pete from Barrhaven.
Yeah, and that is, I think it's a fair statement in that we do a lot deeper dive into the Sens when they're struggling than we do with the Red Blacks, and I'll say that from ownership all the way down, JR. And the term that has been mentioned to me and I know has been brought up for a number of years is concerned with the culture of the club. The other thing I'll say from a management perspective, I was really surprised, and this is on everybody involved, JR, when they were so shocked, including Marcel Desjardins, and they didn't see this coming with Coach Campbell, that means that you're not managing the entire operation properly. Like that part that, everybody was just, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Hey, you got to be communicating with your people. You should have understand. And more importantly, you should have in between that working on it, right? I mean, that should not have lasted until the end of the season. That's when you're good at managing people. You get in there and try to work this out before it comes to a head like that.
Joe writes, very good interview with the former general manager. Clearly, by listening to him, they made the proper decision. His answers, in my view, showed he was out of touch with what was happening. He sounded surprised and is a bit delusional about the state of the team. In a competitive world, change is inevitable, and this had to happen. Who is next is a good question. I'd like to see a young, totally unexpected GM and not a retired retread of a former team. It's a new world and a new type of player. Time for a fresh start. That comes from Joe.
Yeah, I'd love Henry Burris. I do love JR, and I love fresh and new, but I find it interesting in any sports league when people don't like experience, and everybody wanted down the road in Toronto, let's get in Kyle Dubas because Kyle's fresh and he's got a nice suit and he's good looking. He's got glasses. He has totally mismanaged that hockey team because he had no experience, JR, and you learn on the job. I disagree on those things. Experience in professional sports means a lot. How many coaches in sports win or don't win, including Bill Belichick, in your first couple of stops? It's you're learning on the job, man. If you think taking any of these jobs right off the hop and just always wanting fresh and new and somebody that loves numbers.
Dale writes, I'm interested to hear from Mark Gowdy, the team president, or he's actually the OSEG president. When you get the chance to interview him, can you please ask him who assists him in the search for the new GM? Does the league help? All this to say, I don't know who or where the football knowledge support comes from in the search for a GM. It would be weird if it were the coaching staff. Thanks. That comes from Dale.
Hey, that is interesting, Jer. In any industry, certainly in football, I'm assuming for Mark Gowdy, first of all, a very bright guy, very resourceful. I would think you make any contacts. And this is also interesting because I remember Jeff Hunt, when they started the franchise, Jer, he was the one in charge of doing all the interviewing. He sat down with tons and tons of people, and he decided, and he hired Marcel Desjardins, was exactly what he wanted as a straightforward, no-nonsense guy. It worked. You'll lean on anybody, including if you're Mark Gowdy, you talk to Coach LaPolice, who's been in the CFL for a long time. You reach out to everybody to try to learn it.
I can tell you that Steve and Chris, Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, have endeavored to try to bring Mark Gowdy on. They've put in the request, so it will remain to see if that happens sometime on In the Box coming up after 10 o'clock this morning. Mark in CP writes, I'm going to interpret what he's saying here. Why is it so horrible with their quarterbacks when it seems like every other team in the CFL seems to be able to keep I think what Mark is saying here, and this is why I always ask you, read your text before you reread it, before you send it. I think what he's saying, and you brought this up and many people have, one of the failures, you could say, of the Red Blacks organization since it was reborn in 2014 is their complete and utter failure to develop a quarterback of their own. So listen, they stumbled into Henry Burris, which was smart and great, and won them a championship. Yeah. And Trevor Harris was brought in, and they doubled down. Whatever you thought of Trevor Harris, he was a competent CFL quarterback, if not more than that, in his time. They decided to move on from him, and since then, it has been a roving cast of characters from Dominique Davis to Matt Nichols to now complete and raw rookies who are playing before they probably should, but through injury and otherwise, they have been forced to play. So is that on the general manager? Absolutely. Part of it is, for sure. And you've asked the question of Marcel when he's been on before. You know, why haven't we in Ottawa been able to develop a quarterback? And I'm not sure he ever gave the answer, but that's certainly the truth. That is the absolute truth. They have not been able to develop a quarterback. We'll see if Caleb Evans or Duck Hodges or Taryn Christian or any of these other young guys eventually become that. But right now, it seems like a long way off before you could say they're competent CFL quarterbacks.
Would I be right in saying, JR, if I asked you of all the teams in the CFL, do you feel like Hamilton over the last 10 years has produced the most quarterbacks?
I would say Calgary.
Okay, Calgary. Yeah. So, I look at that and you kind of wonder what are the programs. Now, for Ottawa, what would have been, I would assume, when you put your business plan together and your football plan together, is when you brought Hank in, I kind of wondered, wow, they're going to be able to win. As they started to win, my thought would be, first of all, he'd be the mentor for the young quarterback. Then he comes in. What was so different when they won right away and won quickly, I think they looked and realized, you know what, we need to keep this moving forward, JR, right? I can't afford right now to bring in a young quarterback. I got to bring an established guy in with Harris. Now you win a Grey Cup, Hank retires, Harris takes over. But even at that, of identifying somebody that's been in the wings here for a few years, and I think that's the fun part, to kind of have your own thing. And I understand when you win, JR, you create names, and it was just tough off the hop because for a lot of people, what did we get to know? We got to know Ellingson, we got to know Sinopoli, we got to know Hank. Like, there was some familiarity with the brand, and that, along with a couple of tough seasons in COVID, has made this, you know, of an incredibly anonymous group, right? I mean,
Could ask even the average fan, name me more than five Ottawa Red Blacks, and they would struggle. That speaks to the lack of star power on the team.
Yeah, it does, and again, that goes hand in hand. But there was also part of what Hank brought, and I mean that sincerely as a family. You have a lifer in Nicole that it's such a big part of an organization of having a quarterback, but his wife is there. They want to help out. Ellingson was a good-looking fella, well-represented. Sinopoli had played here. As I said, I understand that's win and share, but there was just something there. You know, I mean, it was identifiable, and you laid that early, and it's completely gone away here the last few years.
Yeah, I would say on Greg Ellingson in particular, there was an off-the-field incident that came
point.
While he
great
was
point.
A free agent.
Yeah.
So whether that was in part of the decision why they decided to let him go, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, that was right at the end of that season, right?
Yeah. On a different topic, good morning, gents. How about the Rodgers-Masai story that came out this morning? I've only been able to skim it because we've been super busy here on the show. But I think most people are aware now of this incredible... It's almost like Secession, the great HBO show, playing out in real life in this country with what's going down at Rodgers right now. Rodgers Communications with Edward Rodgers, who is the son...
I thought you meant Aaron Rodgers. I thought this is Secession from Deshaun Watson.
No. But the story this morning that Edward Rodgers wanted to not bring back Masai Ujiri as de facto general manager, the head of basketball operations for the Raptors, and was either outvoted or whatever was happening with the board of directors said, he's coming back, talking about Masai. So whether that started all this infighting or whether it's been going on longer than that, that's a new story that has come out this morning. Again, I haven't had a chance to read it. I only saw the headline. Wow. That would seem like an awfully strange thing to do, given the fact that the guy brought a world championship to you like a year and a half ago. Yeah. He's tremendously well thought of around the entire league. Mm-hmm. His off-the-court stuff is off the charts in terms of positive nature. Like, he's everything you would want in an executive and a figurehead for your team, and you don't want to bring him back for whatever reason. Again, not having read the story, that's very curious to me.
Yeah, it is. One of the things I'll say, having worked with for Larry Tannenbaum, JR, and if you go back to the Vince Carter, he falls in love with people, and he is a huge backer, Masai Ujiri, which I don't have a problem. I think Larry's a tremendous person, but this can also just then become power struggles between the big boys, right? Of, oh, that's Larry's guy. I want somebody else in. And I'll also say, from a Raptor standpoint, boys, Maddie and I sat down and watched the Celtics game the other night. Man, oh, man, what a game. And I thought, after watching the opener, JR, but this Scotty Barnes, and not a surprise, at fourth pick overall. But, oh, my gosh.
And they got trashed for that pick, a lot of people said. And Jalen Suggs could end up being a really tremendous player. I haven't watched him play. I've watched him play college, obviously, for Gonzaga. Yeah. But Scotty Barnes, so far, for whatever it is, three games in, is like, wow. He's like the ever-ready bunny who can play.
Well, and I said, like, understand, this guy's 6'9". Like, you have to now, because it's gone long and lean, you almost have to look up and realize they all look like they're about 6'5", and you're thinking, oh, where's all the size? Mix in Pascal Siakam when he comes back, JR, and it's fun to watch Boucher and, you know, OG now healthy. Freddie really looks like he's taking charge. The player I haven't noticed, JR, and again, I'm not a deep basketball guy, is the first-round pick, the point guard from last year that came out of the same school as Kawhi Leonard. Is he on the roster? Do you have any idea?
Malachi Flynn?
Yeah. He is.
Okay. But anyways, just watching it, I was really, and, you know, that's playing against Tatum, one of the best, if not, you know, great player. Their athleticism and the difference of that opener against Washington, I was like, wow, this is pretty good. Now, did go and lose to Dallas the following night, but...
They played really well in that game, too.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I completely agree with you. I watched the majority of that Raptors-Celtics game.
That was fun, eh, Hammer?
It was amazing. It was, like, Scotty Barnes has got me extremely interested in watching him develop and watching Raptor games, to the point where I watched the Dallas game, and then they controlled a lot of the play, but you can just see there's so many new players right now in that system. It's going to take a little bit for everybody for it to be kind of second nature and where you need to be defensively. But once that happens, they've got a lot of big athletic players on that team. That I think that's going to be a really good team.
I thought you said you watched the Raptors game against Dallas because you didn't want to spend time with your in-laws.
No, that came later.
That's where he says, I'm working. I'm doing this for work.
You know what? You got to put some time in, right? You got to put a little mileage in with the in-laws, and it's a lot of fun when you get to see
them. As they're driving away, do you say, hey, see you at Christmas, or do you wait until they're actually in the car?
I shut the door already. They're not even in the vehicle yet. The door is shut. You can hear the
click. Safe drive.
See you later.
Phil in Ottawa writes, red-black season ticket holder. Hats off to Desjardins for his work. Three Grey Cup appearances and one cup win in 7 years. That being said, it was time for him to go. Only in the CFL can a 2-7 team going into the last game still have a hope of making the playoffs. That attitude is also part of the problem, where mediocrity can still get you somewhere. Lastly, the alleged behind-the-scenes BS/drama is as concerning as the on-field product. That comes from Phil in Ottawa. I think great points all there by Phil.
Well, and you just brought up the whole thing, JR. I don't care what sport you're in, what business you're in. There's politics, there's egos. This has happened at junior hockey level, so no surprise there as to what exactly it means. I'm not sure, but like I say, that's welcome to the world.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anyway, what an interesting day. We haven't had a chance to really talk about the game tonight very much. What are you expecting, Caps and Sens tonight?
I got my eye on Ovechkin. You know what's funny? Backstrom's been out, but I will say Kuznetsov's been really, really good.
Yes.
I still think they're real thin in the case of Washington, but we'll use that term, big boy hockey. They're a big, strong team. I'm praying Sabby and going back into the lineup just leaves TW alone. And TW's only got 4 penalty minutes, meaning Tom Wilson on the season. Just let him do his thing, you know.
Don't poke the bear.
Don't bother, right? Just go out and play some ice hockey. Don't worry about him. Let him do his thing. But
maybe a bigger question is, why is Scott Sabourin playing tonight?
Well, the coach said he's in on the forecheck. So.
Okay. All right. Changing things up. They've lost 2 in a row. All right. Anyway, we'll be live from the rink coming up in just a couple of minutes. Stand by, because Steve Lloyd and Chris Stevenson will take you through the next 4 hours of In the Box alongside Graham Creech. Then on the drive this afternoon, it's Lee and AJ, and you can imagine they'll have lots to talk about the Marcel Desjardins firing today alongside Matty Valls.